The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming up, Celtic ready for Eddie, rice boils over, and Scotland's next top model. I'm Andrew Slaven, and alongside me, esteemed football writer JJ Bull. JJ, the listeners can't see you right now. What have you modelled your look on?
I'm not sure, but I heard you say that as steamed, as though I'm like a steamed football writer rather than esteemed.
Constantly steaming.
A steamed ham. Yeah. No, I didn't. Yeah, that's all I have for you right now.
All right, cool. No worries. Also joining us, senior producer at Motherwell, Laura Brannan. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Who could be a model at Motherwell, Laura? Who's good on camera?
Bevis McGarry. He absolutely adores the camera.
Does he?
Natural born poser.
Yeah. Interesting. I should probably say, the reason I'm bringing this up is because, and we might mention it later on in the podcast, is that I found out that Alan Russell, the new coach at Aberdeen, was once a model and shared a stage with Christina Aguilera.
He is hot AF, to be fair.
Hot AF. Just like you, JJ. Before we talk about the Scottish Cup, let's talk about Scotland. We got our first win in the World Cup qualifying. Our first taste of maybe a new team, a new setup. But what are your thoughts? What did you like? What did you not like, Laura?
I liked that we got 3 points. That was good. It was a nice way to end the opening three games of the campaign. A little bit disappointing overall, just to get 5 points out of 9. But at least we ended on a high, and now we can officially all start to look forward and get excited about the Euros. So, all in all, not the worst opening start, also not the best, but yeah, how good was Kieran Tierney? Oh my God. A little bit nervous now because we're entering that stage of players can really start to get injured now and miss the Euros, and we saw Tierney come off early in the Arsenal game the other day. So it's a wee bit of a nervous time as we await the results of his scan or whatever he's going through to get the outcome of that. But fingers crossed it's not as serious as it first looks.
Yeah, it was a hat-trick of assists for Tierney. We beat the Faroes 4-0. And the debate about him and Andy Robertson being in the same team, that kind of reignited itself. And maybe that's disappeared now that Tierney could be out. I hope he isn't. But JJ, do you think it's a bit unfair for this to be brought back to the attention? Can Andy Robertson and Kieran Tierney be in the same team?
Well, the thing is, you have to play them both because they're two best players. So you have to get them in the team. And the system works so that they both can get in. And it does work in theory. Tierney does play or has played that left centre-back role for Arsenal. And he likes to, he doesn't have to run wide all the time. He can run through the middle and he underlaps quite a lot for Scotland, as we saw in those games. But, I mean, Tierney's like they're both great players. Robertson's not had a great season with Liverpool because Liverpool haven't had a great season. But, like, Robertson is still by far and away, like, the best player. If he was rated on a computer game, he'd have the highest average rating. He'd be the 85 rated player or whatever. The other way I think you could do it would be because Robertson's, like, if you ever look at his touches, like, touch maps for Liverpool games, it always tends to make him look like he's basically a winger. So he's, like, a left-sided midfielder. So you could play him as a left-sided winger or something like that in a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-3-1, something like that, and have Tierney as his left-back. But then it's another whole position because although Robertson knows his defensive positioning, he doesn't know the attacking places, even though he spends most of the game actually as a forward. Like, there was parts of the game against the Faroes where Robertson was, like, a striker in the middle of the box.
Even, like, Tierney himself was like, he was like bombing forward, and you're like, a left centre back, mate, calm down.
You can do that against those teams, I suppose. I get the argument. I mean, you just have to be able to play them. It's unfortunate, but you can't put one of them on the right or something like that. The way you could do it is because, like, Robertson touches the ball so often in the opposition half with Liverpool. Like, I can't remember who was saying to me, David Watherston, that ex-player, was saying that it would be a different. It's a different position. The way you receive the ball is different, and then you've, like, it's just a different position basically. So it's not as easy as just moving him to a winger, even though that is basically what he is. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and the fact that, you know, it's not like we're ever going to drop Robertson. He is the captain of the team after all. Special shout for I think, John McGinn, the meatball master, definitely is such a player for Scotland. It's unreal. Plays such more of a defensive role for Aston Villa. But he's scored 9 goals for Scotland now since Steve Clarke was appointed, which is absolutely class. And just a final note on Shea Adams. I thought he really did well coming in. Got his first Scotland cap, got his first Scotland goal. And Radio Clyde's Andrew McLean pointed out that Scotland had scored 7 goals with Adams on the pitch during the international break and 0 goals in the 99 minutes that Adams wasn't on the pitch. What did you guys think of his performance?
I'm not the biggest Shea Adams fan. I think that's for all
I'm
to
only
see.
Asking you about his performance, like, not his inclusion.
He did well. Obviously, the stats look good. I always say this, the stats can be manipulated any way you want. We also scored 7 goals when Andy Robertson was on the pitch. And it's the way you look at it, you can twist it any way you want. I think he did well. I, again, wouldn't want him in ahead of the likes of London Dykes, but I think it was interesting to see how the two paired up together. In the game against Faroe Islands. So there's definitely positivity there. I thought he took his goal excellently. His little touch, the little roll in the ball was sublime before finishing it. So it was really nice to see. And just a wee note on John McGinn as well before we move on. He's now into double figures in total for Scotland, which is, he's only one of 50, I think it's 15 players to have ever done it in the history of the national team, which I think is a remarkably low number of players that have scored double figures, but full credit to him because he had a great international break. I loved his post-match interview where he described taking the ball on the napper and then called for Sturgeon to let fans into Hampden. I was just sitting there very, very proud.
Shea Adams, though, I thought he was great, and I think you can see, like Laura's saying, on his movement, and there's just little things he does that clearly put him a level above a player like Lyndon Dykes, I would say. You can tell that he's just a different kind of, he's just a different level. Although, like, I don't know if you saw Southampton play against Burnley on I think it was Sunday, was it Saturday? It was one of the Saturday, I think it was. Adams missed a 1v1 running straight through, clear on goal. So he's capable of doing that too. But he, I think he's clearly a very good striker who is still developing. And once he kind of figures out what he is, I think he'll be really, really useful for us.
Okay, coming up, the return of the Scottish Cup. But let's start with Howe for now.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Yes, it looks like Eddie Howe will soon be named the new Celtic manager. In fact, it might even have happened by the time you're listening to this podcast. Howe has been out of work since leaving relegated Bournemouth at the end of last season. He was in charge at the Vitality Stadium for more than 450 games across 2 spells, spanning more than a decade. He guided them to 3 promotions in 6 seasons. And we're joined now, delighted to be joined now, by The Athletic's Peter Rutzler, who covered Howe's last season at Bournemouth. And Peter, is this the kind of job that Eddie has always coveted?
I think it's difficult to say what he's always coveted. I think it's always been known that he would go on to bigger and better things than Bournemouth, and that's no disrespect to Bournemouth, of course, but I think even among the players he worked with and those he brought through with him up the leagues, there was always a sense that he's destined for something greater. I think in terms of the challenge, a club like Celtic is what he will thrive in, I think. And Celtic's a big club, and I think for Howe, there's always been that underlying drive and ambition. And what's been difficult, of course, is his attachment to Bournemouth has been so so long-standing. It's part of him, really, the club. You know, he joined the club as a youngster, came through the academy, captained it at 21. You know, when he left, he got injured twice at Portsmouth, and the fans clubbed together to buy him back. And that tie and that link was a really difficult one to sever. But now that that's happened, you know, that underlying sense of fulfilling what he probably couldn't do in his career, his playing career, is coming to the fore now. And, you know, Celtic seems like a good step for him.
It's a massive jump, like going from Bournemouth to Celtic, especially with the pressures and demands of it. And I don't know what you thought went wrong at Bournemouth, or whether you think it just fizzled out naturally, or if he's ready for it even.
I think he is ready for it. I think one of the things that's always mentioned is whether he stayed too long, and I think maybe there's an element of that. But Looking at last season, I think there are a couple of things that really sort of hurt Bournemouth. I mean, they started the season very well. You know, they had a good, exciting young squad. They still had Callum Wilson and Ryan Fraser together. David Brooks had come in, but you know, Brooks was injured for the entire season. Fraser had his contract worries hanging over him all year. Was not the same player. And I think underlying everything were those injuries. And you know, there were times, in especially over the winter period, where Bournemouth's injury list would be about 9 or 10 players each week. Hal too had tried to change the tactical setup. You know, Bournemouth were known for their gung-ho attacking football, really progressive front foot pressing, and they'd moved away from that. And those changes, those injuries, and everything else together, from Fraser to Brooks missing, it, you know, it all played a big part in the fine margins of the Premier League.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, what do you think? Like what's made Celtic attracted to Eddie Howe in particular?
There's an exciting challenge there. You know, you've got Steven Gerrard overseeing a renewed Rangers. He'll want to go head toe-to-toe with him. He will want to go into Europe. He'll want to test himself on the biggest stages. And Celtic offer all of that. And, you know, there's the frameworks there. There's a history of attacking progressive football. It ticks a lot of boxes for him. And, you know, as I said earlier, you know, there is that drive and ambition to go as far as he can in the game. And you know, when the opportunity presents itself at a club like Celtic, where he can take that next step, because you know, Bournemouth are a small club, and it got to a point, you know, where he maybe couldn't take that step from Bournemouth to a top six Premier League club, or even a top eight, top ten. You know, Celtic offers, you know, a really good opportunity to build a team, build a young team, and mould it in his own likeness, really.
Do you think he's got the character to be a Celtic manager? Like, he is quite well-mannered, but do you think he's got what it takes to be in this goldfish bowl of Glasgow and cope with the pressures of that?
Yeah. In terms of coping with pressure, I think he'll thrive under that. You know, I guess it's a completely new challenge. It's a different type of pressure, absolutely, in terms of the scrutiny and the focus. I don't think he'll be used to that. Because that just wasn't the same with Bournemouth. It's a completely different environment. But in terms of the playing side pressures, I don't think, you know, it was a long time ago, but his first stint in management, I think he goes back to that all the time when he took over as a, you know, a 31-year-old trying to save his club from dropping out of the Football League. You know, they started that season on minus 17 points. And, you know, if they dropped out of the league, they would have gone bust. And, you know, that's his club as well. It wasn't just any club. Club he came through as a player, a club that means everything to him. And I think that will form a key part of dealing with the pressures that come with Celtic. But, you know, of course, that said, this is a new challenge, and how he adapts to it will be interesting. I don't think you're going to get a sort of excitable manager on the touchline. That's just not how he is. He's a very controlled, keeps his emotions in check type of person, and very well spoken. He is that sort of well-mannered manager. And but I think that serves him well, and that's what's helped him to not get too high with the highs and too low with the lows and during his time at Bournemouth, and that could probably be a good thing coming into Celtic.
I think I was just going to ask one more question about Howe's character, you know, behind the scenes, because I think a lot of Celtic fans are maybe concerned of a manager coming in who would be too weak to challenge the board. And I just wonder if Howe would be one that would want things his way rather than going with, you know, what he's being told to do.
That's the thing. So obviously there's the outward projection of a very mild manners. You know, sometimes the Ryder's been, you know, almost like a school teacher sort of appearance. You know, he seems quite friendly. But speak to any of his players and there are two sides to Eddie Howe. He can be very, very ruthless. And you can't take a team like Bournemouth from the fourth tier to the Premier League without having to make some very tough decisions and telling some hard truths. And I think that side to his character will serve him well. And I think in terms of managing upwards, I think, you know, at Bournemouth, it was his kingdom, really. It was, everything was through him. And he'll want to try and regain as much control as he did at Bournemouth, I'd imagine, as he can at Celtic. And for him, it's his way or the highway, for players especially. You know, if you don't buy into what he wants to do, then you're not going to be part of what of his project. If you're with him, you know, he'll back you to the hilt. That's what most of his former players tell you. But if you're not, then you've got no place in an Eddie Howe side. So there's definitely two sides to him. There's a real ruthless streak. I mean, you look back at some of the some of the players that sort of didn't quite make it. I think Brett Pittman was one. He was there with him from the start in League Two, promotion from the Championship, but then was told in the, when he got to Premier League, he said, look, I don't think I've got a role for you here. Didn't play in the Premier League in the end. And then Mark Pugh, another a club legend at Bournemouth, comes towards the end of his contract. He felt as fit as he'd ever done, but Eddie Howe turned to him and said, look, I don't think there's a place for you here. And didn't renew his contract. So there is definitely a hard side to him, a ruthless side to him that, you know, will really, you'll need it. You'll absolutely need it at Celtic.
Great to speak to Peter there. And just amongst ourselves now, JJ and Laura, a lot of social media reaction comparing Eddie Howe to Brendan Rodgers. But are they similar, JJ?
No, I don't think so. I think Brendan Rodgers is one of the most like highly regarded managers in like European football, genuinely, and he was part of this whole breed of new coaches who came through who coached in that kind of Jose Mourinho way. Like he worked at Chelsea under Mourinho. He's always been highly thought of and is clearly a very good manager. He also took Liverpool to nearly winning the title, which is very hard to do. I think he basically did like a real life football manager job, taking Bournemouth up to the Premier League, but then the way they played, it was very like they were very predictable. I think his record in the transfer market was not good. One of the things he did very well, which Celtic can look at, is he took players like Simon Francis and Steve Cook, and they, when they were playing lower league, and he made them decent Premier League players, but not so good they didn't end up getting relegated in the end. And some of the players he bought for a lot of money, people like Jordan Ibe, he maybe saw potential in them, but I don't think he really got an awful lot out of them. They were backed by quite a wealthy chairman or owner, whatever it was, when they were coming up through the leagues. And they spent quite a bit of money relative to other clubs, mostly on wages, I think it was. But I mean, the season they got promoted, they only spent something like 3 million for the Championship. I mean, they spent 3 million on Callum Wilson, which is obviously quite a good buy. But I just don't think, like Peter was saying, he thinks he's ready for this this big job at Celtic. But it's really, really massive. It's like a huge, huge, very different breed of club to Bournemouth.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose, like you said about how his transfer record hasn't been that good, I mean, I've heard that he wants to bring up Richard Hughes as the director of football at Celtic, someone who was with him at Bournemouth, and it'll be his job to kind of, well, stack up the benches with some good players for Celtic. So, and there's a couple of Howe stats we've got, and some that contradict the story of him being an attacking football coach. Since 2003, when Opta started compiling stats, the only home side to have ever failed to have a single shot in a Premier League game was his Bournemouth team against Man City in 2019. But that's Man City.
So, yeah.
But last season, Bournemouth against Burnley was the game that produced the fewest shots in Premier League history, which is just 5 between the two teams. So it's one of those things that I think, Eddie Howe, like you heard from Peter, I've heard very similar. He is a ruthless coach, and I've friends of mine who are concerned that he might be a weak manager. He's certainly not that. He's certainly someone who will cut players down to size if he needs to. He does have a ruthless streak, and I think that'll be an interesting combination when you think of the Celtic board potentially in the past giving jobs to the boys, i.e. Neil Lennon. I think this will be an interesting couple of months if he comes in, if he turns this team and this club into his sort of image. Laura?
I'm just going to pull you back to what you were talking about with Richard Hughes here, as he's been kind of talked about as director of football. Do you not think it's kind of strange that if this does happen, if this does unfold to happen like this, is it not a bit strange that a manager appoints a director of football? Should it not be the other way around? It kind of feels like to me that the director of football is hired to kind of set the philosophy of the club and the mantra of the club, and then he helps appoint the manager to fit into that. And not vice versa.
I think maybe in response to that, it's one of those things where in discussions, maybe Eddie Howe has said, I'll join Celtic if I can have Richard Hughes. So it's part of the negotiation tactics. And that would have been the job of Peter Lowell and Dominic Mackay, the new incoming chief executive.
I can completely understand.
You're right.
But it seems like it's a short-term solution, because then when months, years down the line, when Eddie Howe's time's up, then his director of football is also up. But it shouldn't be like that. The director of football should be there regardless of who's in charge of the team.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It might, I'm sure you'd hope, you'd surely assume that the club has thought, well, this is what we want to go. This is our short-term, mid-term and long-term objectives. This guy, we get Howe and Hughes in, and Hughes can be the one that can then make sure that they maintain that style of play going forward.
So we don't know if Eddie Howe might already be installed as the new Celtic manager as we record this, but we don't know if he's even going to walk into the dugout straight away. This could be end of the season, potentially. It would be very difficult for him to come in now, JJ, with the amount of fixtures that they've got, big fixtures coming up as well, because, I mean, he's got to play Rangers in the Scottish Cup as well. I'm speaking as if he's already taken the job.
I know, he's not confirmed yet.
Yeah, I know. But obviously Celtic progressing to the next round via 3-0 win over Falkirk, and they've drawn Rangers out of the hat. So Eddie Howe's potential next fixture list is a really difficult one to set his stall out.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? good that James Forrest is back scoring. He's a lovely player, and I really, really hope he's like fit and ready for the Euros, because he'll be like having that pace and width, especially the way that Clark wants to play, it'll be so important.
Really? Yeah. Do you think we've missed him?
Yeah, I think James Forrest is a great player. Yeah,
player for Celtic, or is he a great player for Scotland?
I think he's done well for Scotland. Like, he just gives you something a bit different. I don't know, especially on the right. Like, you need that if you play him as a right winger. I think it's really useful. You could even play him at right wing back. Like, you can do that.
I think it'd be very harsh on whoever misses out at James Forrest's expense, considering because O'Donnell's more of a right back.
That's what I mean. But you'd play Forrest at right wing back in that system.
Potentially. I mean, Ryan Christie's also played in that right side of a front three. If Forrest was going to be deployed in that area,
yeah, you got the Christie though, and then Christie's left footed. Has to go there.
Well, no, because at least O'Donnell can track back and defend. I don't think Forrest is really kind of got that element to him. But I think it's harsh. For Forrest has missed out a whole season, essentially. He's also missed out on some very big games, including qualification. I think it would be very harsh on whoever misses out at his expense, because come on, James Forrest has not got the best track record when it comes to Scotland. Absolutely fantastic player for Celtic. I really, really like him as a player for Celtic. He's so talented, which makes it even more frustrating when he pulls on a Scotland strip for me, because he just doesn't really do it, and I just don't really feel like he's done enough to justify his place. Yeah, I think it'd be harsh.
Well, he did score against Falkirk, and he is back amongst the Celtic team. So, I mean, for him, yeah, hopefully he does come back in good form. But it hasn't been a good season for Celtic. But I suppose they could still win a fifth Scottish Cup in a row, which I don't think has been done before. However, they do travel to Ibrox in the next round. And we're going to discuss how Rangers got on next.
Four, far, 10.
The Masters are Augusta, and Paddy Power are paying even more places than usual, so you get money on your each-way bet if your golfer finishes in the top 10 places. That's right, the top 10. Paddy Power. Online exclusive. Pre-tournament each-way bets on winner market at 1/5 odds. Dead heat rules and T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Shh, you too.
Sorry.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
It was Rangers v Rangers, really, but Cove Rangers, which was an intriguing tie on paper. Steven Gerrard's side wrapped it up, though, in the first half with 4 goals without reply. 28 shots to 1. Fairly convincing, this one. Probably the biggest game in Cove Rangers history, to be fair, JJ. But one of the standout performers, Scott Wright, man of the match performance, I think.
I really rate Wright highly. I think it's a good move from there. Hopefully he's getting starts now in the Cups. I mean, I don't know what you expected Cove to really do here. And you see, like, Jermaine Defoe lining up against Cove Rangers. Like, what are you supposed to do? You've got Mitch Meginson up front. Fraser Fivey, that's where he is, in case you're wondering. Fraser Fivey's been at Cove this whole time. I think he's trying to work at Aberdeen Football Club now as well, like, as a coach. Yeah. Like, Rangers are just... like, they're better than every team in the Premiership, let alone Cove Rangers. So they did well to keep it to four, even. Paul Hartley didn't look particularly happy on the bench watching this.
When does Paul Hartley ever look happy?
That is true.
I thought this one was interesting that Patterson got to play. So Rangers appealed the SFA COVID ban for the, was it four, yeah. five players that went happened a few months, weeks ago? I can't remember, so yes, I'm going to blend it into one just now. So they've appealed this. And the reason that Gerrard gave, quite surprisingly honest, was because he doesn't think that Patterson should miss out because he's a future Scotland potential player, and he thinks it's unfair that he is then missing games as a result. I think this one's interesting because you can see it in two different sides of this argument. I think if a player does something wrong, you can't claim that he doesn't get punished because he is a good footballer. You don't see a player getting a red card and you go, well, we don't want him to miss the next game because he's a good player. We need him. But at the same time, they've been clever with the rules. They're allowed to appeal something. They know that he will then be available. And right now, with Tavernier still out, they're taking advantage of that to get this young player into their team and benefit in that position. So there's kind of I can see both sides of this argument here. I think Rangers have been quite sneaky and quite clever with this one.
Was Gerrard's point not more that he thinks the individual circumstances were slightly different between what Patterson was guilty of and compared to certain other players? Like, I think he used Jordan Jones as an example. And that's more what he was saying, like, it's the punishment should maybe be lighter on him, maybe because he's younger or something like that, maybe let him...
Yeah,
you know.
he did mention age as well, I think. Look, what happened with Jordan Jones and what was it, Edmondson? Was there a player?
Yes, Jordan.
They got more games. They got seven, I think it was seven games they got banned for, whereas these players have got four with a suspension of two extra ones. So it is a smaller punishment. Yeah, I think you do need to take into consideration their age. They are younger. Well, Zunga's not. I think he's much older than the rest of them. But in general, they're younger boys. Look, I think I'm kind of being clear over time saying, like, I don't think it's fair that football is subjected to so many strict punishments in terms of COVID compared to other industries. If you get five Tesco workers that go to a house party on a Saturday night, you don't punish Tesco. You don't punish that shop individually. It's an in-house thing. Maybe they would get disciplinary action from their manager. And I think it should be an in-house thing in football as well. It should be their club to do it and not the SFA. So there's different arguments there that they deserve less of a punishment because of their age and the circumstances. Look, I think Rangers have been clever here. And fair play to them. They've played within the rules to get what they want.
I'm a big fan of any analogies that have to do with football in Tesco, genuinely. They work well.
We'll get sponsorships very soon. Just a special mention for Jermaine Defoe. I don't know if you saw, but he has now scored in every calendar year since the turn of the century.
1 million goals.
Not a million goals, no. But this was his 30th and only his 67th cap for Rangers. He's 38 years
cap.
Old. Oh, did I say cap? Can you imagine if you got caps for just club games?
A full rim.
Yeah.
Like one of these wardrobes that you close and you can't ever open it again.
Yes, I meant to say appearance, not capearance. But I mean, what an impressive stat from a guy who's 38 and he comes in. He's averaging a goal every 106 minutes. It's just impressive. He's such a good player, man. And not just on the field when he does come in, but he must be so important to the team in the background, in the dugout, and in the changing room. I'm so impressed with him.
I can tell.
I just thought I'd give some Defoe love.
Really nice, yeah. It's lovely. Yeah.
What about Hibs? They've made their way into round four. An impressive second half display against Queen of the South, I have to say. They won 3-1 on the night. I'm still kicking the wall because Dobie missed an absolute sitter. But Marvin Bartley on BBC described the second half performance as devastating.
It was a huge second half performance from Hibs. They changed the entire pace of the game in the second half. I think they changed it from, they kind of played the ball to feet more. It completely ripped Queen of the South apart. The quality just improved in general, never really allowed Queens to get close to them, which kind of just completely changed the first 45. I think the Queens have like a lot of quality there, but just not enough to take on a Premiership side right now. I think it just kind of showed the gulf, which it kind of says to me that they're savvy enough to probably get to the playoffs, but probably not all the way to make the step up.
I wonder if Christian Doidge is a good shout now for fantasy football, get him in because of all the goals he's getting. He went ages without scoring. Was it 15 games in a row?
Yeah.
And now three in two games. Three whole goals.
He's on fire. JJ, Aberdeen avoided an upset with a late winner at League One Dumbarton on Saturday. Thank God for Callum Hendry, eh?
Yes. It's a lovely little goal you scored there. The Dumbarton Stadium is really pretty. With the.
Did you say Bumbarton?
I don't think I did. I definitely meant to say Dumbarton. Their stadium, it looks so nice, like the ground around it. It was very picturesque.
Picturesque.
Yeah, but there's another thing. So Aberdeen, again, struggling to really create big opportunities. Dumbarton didn't do badly either. Like, it could have easily gone wrong. And I think what's really interesting, we mentioned at the start of the show, Alan Russell joining is a big deal. Like, he is an elite-level coach. So if anyone doesn't know who this guy is, he is a sexy man. But he also works with England. He's a striker coach, so he works specifically with strikers on movement, positioning, how to get the ball quickly, get their feet, shooting. Like, there's a lot of different drills that all coaches will do. Any attacking coach will do different drills to strikers. But this guy's specific just to try and be able to better take advantage of those bits. And he's working with players like Harry Kane and Raheem Sterling. So when he gets to turn up and he's got Callum Hendry and Bruce Anderson there, it's going to be a slight deviation to what he's used to.
He was also, JJ, he was pivotal in Andre Gray's move to Burnley, I think it was, $15 million he ended up going there from Brentford. But he was in non-league at Luton Town, got promoted out of the National League, and Russell was his personal like striking coach.
Is that right?
Yeah, so he did do little bits on the side for individual players. So he was sought after. He's been sought after for a long time.
Well, it's just good having that. I mean, I've been saying for ages that most of the season, I think we needed Aberdeen needed an attacking coach in, and sure enough, they've got Glass put in the structure. They've got Scott Brown. I can't believe that's happened coming in the end of the season, and you've got Alan Russell, like a proper elite level coach. That's like a really good bit in charge, and players will want to go there. They've got lovely training facilities. It's a big club. Potential to finish third every year. In Russell you've got great coaches. Now, the one thing they have is that there's no like strikers that are in contract at Aberdeen, basically. I think Anderson's the only one when he comes back from his loan at Hamilton, because you've got Kimberley and Hendry are both on loan, and obviously Cosgrove disappeared. So, yeah.
Well, Aberdeen have got Livingston in the next round, and Livingston needed extra time to beat Championship side Raith Rovers. So, to be fair, Raith Rovers are a good shout for the playoffs. If not, they tried to push Hearts as close as they could. But only 2 wins in 9 for Livingston, another team, you know, who we know have struggled ever since the League Cup final against St Johnstone. But Motherwell, Laura, you guys made the trip to Pitmedden to watch the Steelmen steamroller Island League side.
Up it up. Aye. Pitmedden.
Is that your accent?
Half a bonnie place.
You're not. You live quite close to Pitmedden, don't you, JJ? Or you did?
I'm from a place called Old Meldrum, which is just down the road. Aye.
Just in the road.
Well,
for Martin United were the hosts, but they lost 5-0. Good game, Laura, was it?
It was a professional performance. It was just a kind of routine. I think the Fairmartin really kind of set up to be difficult at the start, kind of frustrating. But once the first goal went in, the floodgates opened, really, and it was kind of one-way traffic after that. Great routine win. Nice just to kind of get goals. It was a full-strength team, so to kind of score 5 goals, it's just kind of nice for confidence-wise and kind of the atmosphere around the place when things have not been kind of going well in the league, to kind of get that as a nice little booster in the cup, and also just kind of we see the path now, like through the next rounds, and it really kind of gives some sort of life to the competition, because you can kind of see your route. You can see your route to Hampden.
Yeah, you've got Morton, Laura. Like, can we see Motherwell at Hampden?
Well, Morton and then Hibs in the next round if we can get past Morton. Look, it's a realistic target. I don't think anyone, especially with Celtic Rangers meeting each other this early in the competition, I really don't think anyone can say it can't happen. I don't think anyone should write it off. It's an exciting time. unfortunate that it's the one season where fans can't see us, any team win the competition. So it's a wee bit of a regret in that sense when you're looking forward. But who would ever turn down a trip to Hampden?
Have you filmed there before?
I actually filmed there. My first ever time filming with Motherwell was the last time they were in the semi-final of the Betfred Cup. Wow. When they got to the final, beat Aberdeen, and it was incredible because I got to go on the pitch with the players full time, celebrating in front of the fans.
It's and like your dream, isn't it?
To me, that was I'd never done it with Motherwell before, so it was a bit daunting in that sense. But to be in the Hampden hallowed turf, I was like properly like a star. like caught in the rabbit
like
caught in the headlights.
Played.
I was kind of looking at the goal, like, oh my god, so much has happened at that goal. so yeah, it was great. I'd like to go back now with the experience I've got now, and knowing the players better as well. To have that sort of, those sort of memories this season would be really special.
Did Devante Cole hit a boy up a tree? There was a tweet during this game. Did that happen? It was off a volley.
So he did send a ball out towards a tree. I didn't personally see it if it hit someone, but there was someone in the tree who did eventually catch the ball and throw it back. So I don't know if it trickled down the branches or actually it hit him or not, but it did go into a tree with a person in it. That was a thing. There were actually fans dotted around outside the fencing, kind of in various places around the ground. Do you know what? It was lovely just to see little heads poking over the top of the fence. All ages. There was like a wee boy behind me who must have been about 5 years old, and there was a lovely shot I got of him just kind of peering over. Like, you see his eyes looking over, and then at the other side there was an old man in his bonnet with his can of Tennent's just standing on his own watching the game.
I think I saw that guy.
It was a lovely shot. And then they a few younger fans, kind of teenagers, on top of like a, I don't know if it was like an electricity box or something, some sort of box they were sitting on, and at the end they were all singing full volume for the fans to come over and clap them. And to be honest, you know what, it was absolutely lovely, just to kind of get that atmosphere back again. It felt like last season. Aww. Again, it was really nice. And Graham Alexander was saying it full time, he's never heard fans, like he's never experienced Motherwell fans. So it was really nice for him to actually hear supporters for a change, because he only came in January, so all new to some of them. It was really nice.
Well, you've got Morton, like I said, in the next round. And Morton, they were seconds away from going out at East Fife, but Sean McGinty scored a stoppage time penalty to level it, and then Robbie Muirhead won it in extra time. It had a lovely goal as well, individual effort. But shall we talk about Hamilton? Maybe we shouldn't. I mean, it's only Hamilton after all, isn't it? Only joking, Brian, because he's a big fan of the show.
He went nuts.
Yeah, he wasn't happy, was he?
I love this.
First 20 minutes, 25 minutes, St Mirren were by far the better team. The rest of the game, we dominated. News, you'll never write that because we're Hamilton. My opinion. You'll not write that because we're Hamilton. I want my boys to get credit. We got beat 3-0. It's never 3-0. No in a million year. We're getting no credit for nothing. Didn't he ask me? I don't know what a penalty is these days. I know every time somebody falls in their box is a penalty. So I don't know what a penalty is. I saw the same referee the day at Dumbarton. No gave Dumbarton a penalty, but gave a penalty here for less. There, that's what I saw. And I'm not shouting at these lads. It's just because I'm angry. Because we're getting nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I'm fed up phoning Crawford Allen and being shoved to the side. Because we're only Hamilton.
It's so good.
It's the bangs on the table for me.
Yeah.
It's also the bit, the end when he says, like, I'm no shouting at you, lads. Calms himself down a wee bit. But then gets stuck back in.
You know, there's that scene from that movie, I can't remember what the movie's called, Alec Baldwin comes in, he's in it for like 2 minutes, and he does this whole bit about, like, you make the sale, that kind of thing. It's like one of those monologues that you get, like, loads of, like, actor students will then be good trying to learn how to do that bit by Brian Rice.
He's absolutely right as well when he talks about that Dumbarton penalty claim. Because, Hamilton should have got a penalty. Jim Goodwin also agreed, to be fair, with Brian Rice that it wasn't.
Oh, you're not gonna disagree with him like that, are you? You're windmilled into outer space.
Like, he's got a point. Like, it's always going to hurt going out the cup, especially when the scoreline doesn't reflect the performance.
Yeah.
And he is right to a certain extent as well. If it doesn't happen at Celtic or Rangers, it doesn't get the coverage it sometimes deserves. But I think that happens across the board. I don't think it's just a Hamilton thing. I think that's kind of the non-Old Firm thing. And I do not think it's fair to kind of say that the refs are out to get Hamilton. You've heard pretty much every manager come out at some point this season and complain about refereeing decisions. It's happened. Like, it's happened here at Motherwell, it's happened at St Mirren, it's happened at Hibs. We heard...
Yeah. It's been awful for ages, isn't it?
We've heard Partick Thistle, Ian McCall complaining about the decision, which I guess we'll get on to eventually when we talk about their game. But again, he had a problem with the referee at the weekend. Managers across the board have problems with the referees. Whether that merits a bigger discussion over the kind of quality of the referee in this country and whether they need to be full-time or whatever, that's a whole different argument. But for Brian Rice, look, he's emotional. It was immediately after the game. You can completely understand where he's coming from, but in the cold light of day, on reflection, the refs did not have it in for Hamilton, let's be honest.
JJ, you did say, actually, that Jim Goodwin wasn't going to disagree with Brian Rice because his head might fly off, and maybe his head did fly off. Have you seen this?
Yes. Well, in the Zoom post, what was it, post-match, pre-match? I can't remember which one it was. But
I think it was a pre-match press conference.
How does this even happen with a green screen glitch?
I have no idea.
Because it's easy to key it out. It's the whole point. How does it key out his head? I don't understand how that's happened.
Laura, you must set up these press conferences for
Motherwell. We do our own press conferences still in person. We don't do Zoom press conferences. So we got a real life backdrop that thankfully did not cut off anyone's head, because that would have been a bit more of a serious problem.
Is Jim Goodwin's face really green?
How have they chroma keyed it? I don't understand.
It's such a perfect cut.
Loving this
as
technical
well.
Jargon, JJ.
It's just such a perfect cut. It's not even like half his shoulder or a bit of his neck. It's a pure perfect cut where his skin is.
The heedless buddy. It is amazing. Like, if you can look for Jim Goodwin on Twitter or somewhere with his head gone, it's quite funny. But coming up, Kyle's having a laugh too. We'll look at the rest of the Scottish Cup highlights.
That was a really worrying time being a Rangers fan, not knowing if you'd have a team to support or not.
The Scottish Football League's only acceptable position will be to place Rangers FC into the third division.
It wasn't so much a football match you were involved in as a test of manhood.
And with your support along the way, we will get back to where we belong.
From the bottom to the top, the journey is over. Rangers are back.
It all ended spectacularly in Europe when he had an argument with Rangers fans in a bush.
It's a huge, huge honour for me to be sat here now to be the manager of Rangers. And, you know, the excitement levels are very difficult to contain at the moment.
Drilled by Arfield, Connor Goldson looking to score again, and he has scored again, and Rangers are in such a good place now.
Everybody in Scotland was talking about 10 this at the start of the season, and the only number they're now talking about is 55.
To get the full story of the fall and rise of Rangers, subscribe now to Beyond the Headline.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
Okay, time now to hear from our friends Paddy Power, courtesy of our best friend, producer Charlie. Charlie, anybody wanting a break from the Scottish Cup? Tell us about the Premiership. It's back on Saturday.
It is the first weekend since the split. How does Kilmarnock v Ross County take your fancy? We're about to mention Killy's goal-scoring exploits. They've won the last two games 4-0 and 4-1. And Killy to win 4-0 or 4-1 is 40-1 with Paddy Power. I'm also struck by St Johnstone v Aberdeen. St Johnstone's strutting around the top six like they own the place, even though they took their own sweet time to get there. And maybe they're right to feel smug on Saturday, because that guy who's been the only one scoring goals for Aberdeen in the last 3 months, they own him. Callum Hendry is ineligible on Saturday. Guy Milamed is the favourite with Paddy Power to open the scoring at 4-1. The next favourite to be first goal scorer is no goal scorer at 9-2. And to be fair, he has been on fire this season, particularly in Aberdeen matches.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah.
Thanks, Charlie. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. T's and C's apply. And when the fun stops, you should stop it.
Here's Mackay. Away from Larkin. Oh, he's done really well. Mackay opens up for him. What a goal from Danny Mackay. A solo effort from the youngster. That is quite superb.
The weekend began with a Highland derby on Friday night. And it was Championship Inverness that claimed the bragging rights over Ross County with a 3-1 victory at Dingwall.
They've been bragging all day.
Yep. Billy Mackay gave the Staggies the lead against his old club, but there's a new Mackay in town, and he spells his name differently. Yes, 19-year-old Danny with a... Oh, it's a great solo goal, to be fair, with Cali Thistle turning it around. I mean, it's one of those... Cali Thistle haven't had a great season, but this is going to be one of their highlights of the past year.
Well, what's it? 5 wins in a row in all competitions for Inverness now? What's going on? So Neil McCann's in charge just now, who's John Robertson's on compassionate leave, but he's just covering for a little bit, right? So he's not actually.
Yeah, so John Robertson's it's bereavement is the reason. So Neil McCann, who's pals with John, has came in.
And I think this is interesting as well. Like we'd kind of talked about briefly about you kind of forget that managers are humans as well, and they kind of go through this and they need a break. I don't know how long John Robertson's going to be off for, but to be honest, fair play to Inverness for giving him the time he needs. I find this a really interesting topic. I think there was an article in The Athletic at the weekend about what it's like to really work for a club. I don't know if you saw it. It was specialising on sports scientist department more than anything, but to be honest, it kind of applies across the board. It was wildly accurate, regardless of what department you're in. If you can check it out, I think it's really interesting. It kind of discusses how you work pretty much like a 60 plus hour week, and you don't really have a life outside of football, and everything is consumed by the team, the club. Even when you go home at night, you take your work home. You don't switch off. And it was kind of alluding to why it's a kind of young person's game. When they kind of get to a certain age or a certain stage in their life, when they kind of have a family and settle down, they break away from football in a way. And it's more for the kind of younger generations. So I just think it kind of ties back into this kind of bereavement thing. There's a topic at Cali Thistle just now, because it just kind of shows that there is a very much a stigma in the game where if you're not seen by the club and you're not in, you're not seen to be working. So I think it's nice that the Inverness have kind of challenged that stigma in a way. Kind of what we've seen in the past with them, obviously, like the kind of players that have suffered mental health issues and the clubs have given them time off. It's kind of a similar kind of feel to that, where the Inverness have just kind of given John Robertson the time he needs and went, look, we're not going to push it, take what you need. And it's very unusual in football to find that sort of human element to it, I think.
Well said, Laura. We've actually seen something similar in Italy with Fiorentina, Cesare Prandelli. And sometimes, yeah, we do forget that managers are human. And I think that article you're referring to, it's called The Reality of Working Behind the Scenes at a Football Club by Adam Crafton. So if anyone's interested in that, yeah, definitely worth it, a read. Let's look at Partick Thistle, who looked like they were going to be upsetting Dundee United, but two late goals from Lauren Shankland and Nicky Clark turned the tie at Tannadice for the Tangerines. A tangerine dream. Ian McCall said that Ryan Edwards had punched Brian Graham. Was this off the camera? I haven't seen this incident.
Yeah, so apparently it was off the ball, and broadcast don't have it There's no one on camera that's got it, but a goalie coach apparently and the assistant saw it. I don't know the full details of it, but apparently there was a swing, there was a punch in some variety, which coupled with the foul that in the lead up to Dundee United's winner. I think it's a bit of a signer for Thistle to have led for so long and played so well in this game and to kind of lose two late goals in the way they did with the kind of refereeing decisions that went against them. I think it's maybe a wee bit hard for them. Is this the 100th year anniversary of Thistle winning the cup as well? I think it's either the 50th anniversary or the 100th year anniversary. Apologies for not... I know that's a big difference. But they've brought this commemorative strip to mark the anniversary. Only got to wear it for one game, but lovely strip as it is. I just think this will be a hard one for them to take. I think the manner in which they lost it will be tough for them.
Yeah, you're right, Laura. It is the 100th year anniversary. Interesting. Kyle Lafferty's continued a pretty good start at Kilmarnock. He's got a hat-trick in their 4-0 win against Stenhouse Muir. He's got two assists and six goals after four starts. A player making the difference that was required, Laura.
Yeah, possibly a slow start in terms of, well, more Tommy Wright than Lafferty himself, but both have really came into themselves and came into a game at Kelly. Took a wee bit of time to settle. But to be honest, I think we all saw where it was going. I think we all had the kind of idea that Tommy Wright was going to click and Kyle Lafferty was going to click. And I think while Kyle Lafferty in himself is doing well in terms of his goals and his assists, another benefit to the team in general is I think the opposition are putting so much focus on him as an individual that it is then in turn allowing the other players around him to play and give them a bit more freedom and space to move around. So in turn, I think Kelly are just being... benefiting from strength in general from having him in the team. In terms of Tommy Wright though as well, I know he kind of struggled the first couple of games, but it's kind of the open the floodgates kind of idea again. They kind of get one positive result and it just kind of keeps spiralling. It's the whole kind of wins breeds confidence mentality. They're building up this momentum and it's coming at just exactly the right time for them. It's going into this relegation battle and they've got, what is it, Ross County up next, which is their chance to jump above them and that's get out of this one, playoff yeah. zone. So there's a massive game for them at the weekend to kind of start that run of post-split fixtures. And I think it's coming at just the right time for them as well with that mentality.
George Oakley scored as well.
Off the bench to score. I thought he was quite a decent player, Oakley, when he was at Hamilton. I thought he was decent.
Yeah, he was decent. He scored a worldie against Aberdeen 2 years ago as well, JJ. Do you remember that?
Like it's like Van Basten sort of goal where he volleys it and it's like an impossible angle. It's such a good hit. Oh, yeah, great goal.
Brora Rangers looked like continuing their fairy tale. They led Stranraer 1-0 with a couple of minutes to go. An awful journey for Stranraer to go from Stranraer all the way up to Brora. But Stevie Farrell's side forced extra time and eventually won by 3-1. We spoke to Brora boss Stephen Mackay last week and they've been awarded the Highland League title despite only playing 3 games this season.
Well deserved.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be fair, Mackay said himself it's a bit strange and he's not too sure, but it's more of a, you know, it makes up for last season because it looks like they're going to have their playoff tie with Kelty Hearts coming up, which is, it's the right outcome, isn't it?
Probably, yeah. I mean, it's quite funny winning a league after 3 games. It makes sense that now they get to have that playoff. The problem is, I mean, all that work, and if they just don't get it right in the playoff, do you know? That's like 2 years worth of waiting. Yeah,
horrible. The other Highland League side, Fraserburgh, were 2-1 up against Montrose, but Stuart Petrie's side ran out 4-2 winners. But League Two, Stranraer will host Hibs in round 4. And quickly moving on to St Johnstone, they kept their hopes of a cup double alive with a 1-0 win over Championship Dundee at Dens Park in the Tayside Derby. That Charlie Adam missed from the penalty spot. Oh man, I mean, I would have put my house on Charlie Adams scoring from the penalty spot. Unlucky, but what a save. What a save from Xander Clark, who also gave away the penalty. I don't know what he was thinking.
Would you really put your house, would you bet your entire house on Charlie Adams scoring a penalty? If that was like a thing.
If that was a thing,
if you really had to do it.
Yeah, I genuinely think I would put up.
And all that would happen,
I own of my house.
Is if he missed, you would have to give up that percentage of the house. And if he scores, you don't get anything. You just get to keep your house.
It's only a
certain amount
after all.
It's ridiculous bets, Slaven.
Two more results just to round up. Obviously St Johnstone will take on Clyde in round four. The League One side upset Championship Ayr United at Somerset Park. Good to see some upsets in this cup. And we've got Forfar Athletic as well. They overcame Edinburgh City on penalties. The Loons host Dundee United in the last 16. All right, I think just before we finish the show, we got some questions in from the lovely Twitter sphere. So, I mean, please send your questions in at the Totally Show. The first one comes from Ardem, or A-R-D-M, who asks, who would you tip to meet Celtic or Rangers in the final? If they get to the final. Can Aberdeen 1-0 their way to the final, or will there be a surprise package? I mean, Laura, you're going to say the mother are going to reach the final.
my point was more, the wording of the question was, well, one of the Old Firm are going out. Who's going to be the other half in the Old Firm fight in the final? It's like, well, hold on a minute. There's the last 16 rounds, so there's no guaranteeing that the other half of the Old Firm is going to get through another two rounds to make it to the final. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bit presumptuous. So no, it's all open and it's anyone's cup.
I think St Johnstone.
Yeah, I think so too. I've got this weird feeling. Yeah, like they're just going to do it for some reason. I don't know why. It's just, they must, yeah. It's weird how you can have like a totally different league season to your cup season. Like, I remember when Aberdeen were dreadful under Ebbie Scofdale and kept reaching finals and semi-finals. It was weird. Like, they just kept managing to do it. And I think St Johnstone can manage. I mean, they've not had a bad season, obviously. They're top six, so doing well.
I was interested to know who was the last team outside of Celtic and Rangers to win a cup double. So if St Johnstone do it, they'll do what Aberdeen did. It was Aberdeen who did it in 1990. We also got a question from Ryan, who asks, what are your guys' minimum and maximum expectations for the Euros for Scotland? I mean, Laura, we're going to win it, aren't we?
Obviously, yeah. Have you not heard?
That is the minimum and maximum expectation.
Exactly. Nothing less.
JJ, bring us down to size.
It would be lucky if we get a point. I think honestly,
a point.
I'm not even fussed. I think it's going to be such a good laugh, like being able to watch it with, hopefully with friends, like in bars. Hopefully,
I'm so excited
to watch the games. Like it's just, you know, whenever it's like a shared like bouncy atmosphere. I just really want that. I don't even care if we get done 4-0 by everyone.
That's the thing. I mean, like we talk about just reaching the tournament. I'm not even thinking about the individual games. I'm glad that
really
they've got
not the England game.
It's not my job. It's not my job to think about the opposition.
It's all of our jobs.
It's right now. It is, as a fan, it's all about what JJ says. It's the carnival atmosphere. It's the party. It's the things. It's the getting together with your friends to watch it. We look, if we can't get into stadiums, it's gonna be heartbreaking. But as long as we can still be with friends in pubs or fan zones, whatever, it's the party for me. It's what I've never experienced. So see what happens on the pitch. It's a secondary thing. It's just about the carnival atmosphere of being at a tournament for me. I'm not even thinking about the actual fixtures itself right now. That's for the players and coaches to worry about.
Just I'm in full-on fan mode. Very good. And final question came from Ray McGregor. Who's your non-Old Firm player of the year?
This is a difficult one. I mean, I live in a Motherwell bubble. I don't think a Motherwell player will be up. I don't think a Motherwell player will be up for the main Player of the Year award. It's not been the best season for the club, but I can be biased from a Motherwell perspective. I think I'm going to look at Tony Watt has been an outstanding performer. Liam Kelly, albeit half a season, has been outstanding as well.
What about Liam Polworth?
Lulworth.
Maybe not so much.
I only say that because I saw that his other half was rather unhappy with Graham Alexander. I mean, Polworth hasn't been played that much since Alexander came in.
I'll step in here because I don't think Laura's going to say anything about this one.
Go on, JJ. Yeah.
Well, his wife is doing some social media things that implied that Graham Alexander is not the greatest manager since Bruce Forsyth and sliced bread.
Yeah.
In terms of the best player outside the Old Firm, so like who scored, so their rating system, they have it is Paul Hanlon at Hibs. He's had a good season.
Interesting,
I think Ryan Seagrass at Dundee United has had a good season.
Oh, he has.
As a goalkeeper. I really like Ross Callaghan. What did I say?
It is. Yeah.
Did I say Ryan Seagrass? Ryan Seagrass. Please leave that in. I meant Benjamin Seagrass. Not Ryan, not the American television presenter. I hope that stays in as
E Entertainment, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh my God, what an idiot! Ross Callaghan at Hamilton thinks it's a good season, and if they finish 10th, he'll be good for that.
Scott Robinson as well at Livy has been good.
Yeah, John Guffey's is a good season.
Yeah. I think we'd all been kind of saying Kevin Nisbet as well, if it was based on the first half of the season.
Yeah,
he's
agree,
the one that sticks out in my head. He just hasn't played much of the second half.
I think Lewis Ferguson a good start to the season, but the second half has been pretty... I think a lot of Aberdeen players have just really gone... They've just melted. Nothing's really gone very well. Yeah, you could say Sean Rooney at St Johnstone, but only because of the last like couple of months, few months.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Like Chris Burke had a really good season earlier on in the season.
Yeah, there's a lot of good players. A lot of good players. We can't pin it down to one. But I think we end it there. Thank you for listening. Thanks, JJ, Laura, and to the Little Kicks for the awesome theme song that you're hearing right now. Thanks for Peter as well for joining us from The Athletic. We'll be back next Tuesday. Have a great week. Stay safe, and we'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Scottish Football Show is a Money News Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.